Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You know, before we begin, I just want to let you know, I'm sitting here on the stoop, looking out at the alley, a couple birds chirping, some dogs are barking. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. And if you like what you're listening to, find us on iTunes. Write us a kick-ass review. I think we've got like a 4.9 rating out of 5. That's not bad. But we need more of you. So tell your friends. Tell your friends to write us a kick-ass review. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts. You don't have to pay for it. It's free. We don't do it for money. We just do it because, you know what? We like to talk about Chicago. We think maybe you'd be interested in some of the guests we have. So tell your friends. Spread the word. I'm sitting out on the back stoop of the 3 Flat, looking out at the alley, reading my email, and I figured this would happen. I'm being called a politically correct weasel, a big fat wuss, for giving the golden mootsa to the murder hornets rather than to Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot for her finger for me but not for thee Chicago police finger policy. Murder hornet, you lose all credibility for wussing out and not picking a real award winner. You're just PC like all the other PC folks, writes Jim Burke from Ohio. Thanks for reading me in Ohio, Jim. But there were others who said the same thing. Murder hornets? Hornets feel no shame, Cass. Man up, you coward. Yeah, the mayor gave the finger to the president with her, I've got an F and I've got a U comment. And now she wants to fire a Chicago police officer for giving the finger to protesters, George Floyd protesters, who were giving the finger to him. That's the finger for me, but not for thee, Lori. Okay, suspend the man. Yes, without pay, of course. Police should never give the finger to citizens who were protesting. But fire the guy when you did the same thing? So to Lightfoot's finger for me but not for thee policy, I gave a half mootsa. It's kind of a passive-aggressive nah. It wasn't a frontal. It wasn't the big, fat, golden mootsa, which I reserved in my wussy, cowardly way for the murder hornets. You want to know why? Because I like Mayor Lightfoot. I think she's a truthful person, and I see Lori this way. In this Chicago now, Chicago that's broke, Chicago that's trying to come back from the violence over the past few days, I see her trying to dance on top of a log floating in the Chicago River while she's spinning plates on sticks and trying not to fall in. Violence, a ruined economy from coronavirus shutdowns, the city and state finances have been drowning in red ink long ago. Lightfoot and Pritzker did not want people to gather to go to work or go to church during their coronavirus shutdown, but hey, tens of thousands, 20,000, 30,000 people protesting on the streets all together, spitting, coughing. Yeah, that was okay. There was no social distancing during a protest, and there was no social distancing later when the violent hijacked the protests. So I guess one politics is okay, and another politics is not. And we'll see whether the coronavirus spreads now and begins to slaughter us all. And up on the banks of the Chicago River, looking down at Lori, dancing on that log, spinning the plates, you know who's there? All the tribes in the city of tribes shouting at her, hoping she'll fall. And if she falls, Chicago falls. Was the mayor caught unprepared in the George Floyd riots? Yes. She did not call up enough cops. She did not have them in riot gear. She did not want the National Guard here. And as a result, downtown was trashed and looted. The windows were broken. Michigan Avenue, River North, up and down on the south end of the loop, neighborhood businesses trashed all the way out to 75th and Stony Island, the Walgreens, the Jewel, and so on. And on top of all that, businesses had been shut down for 11 weeks in that coronavirus shutdown of commerce. And up on the banks of the river, looking down on Lori Lightfoot and the spinning log, you can see the Chicago Teachers Union demanding that she defund police and take cops out of the public schools. Oh, they scream and virtue signal now, right? They flip the finger at cops. They stand face to face screaming. They're loud. They're angry about what happened to George Floyd, and I called it murder when it happened. But they had nothing to say when the Chicago Tribune reported that 500 students had been sexually abused by teachers and other school personnel. They had nothing to say then. And that was just, what, a year ago? Then it was crickets. Then it was, yeah, to try to get a comment out of them, I had to make like four calls and got a half-hearted comment, a PC, nothing. It was crickets. But now they scream as the mayor tries to stand upright on that log of hers. And organized black gangs looting stores on a large scale. Let's just admit it. Not all the protesters were peaceful, right? Somebody broke those windows. Somebody got the U-Haul trucks ready to fill them up with goods. But remember this. They'd already been led to it by social justice warriors of Chicago, including Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. Just a couple of years ago, she allowed for mass shoplifting on Michigan Avenue by dropping the threshold for felony shoplifting. You had to steal more than $1,000 worth of goods, even to spend a day in court or a night in jail. And then you have the Latin Kings, the Latino gangs harassing black protesters out of their neighborhoods. Here's my question. When do the Latin Kings and the Two Sixers begin demanding protection money from the shopkeepers? Because that's the Chicago way, too. Already, media is trying to bleed out some stories about black and brown unity. But there's no media mitigation for the white boy thugs with their baseball bats in Bridgeport. Although, really, I hate to tell my more progressive colleagues, but that's not the old Bridgeport. In the old Bridgeport, they'd have been up on the rooftops with long guns, like the Italians on Grand Avenue back in the King riots of 1968. And in the really old Bridgeport, 1919, some white guy with political future ahead of him threw a rock and killed a black man on the beach. And that started the most violent and deadly race riot in American history. And now all the tribes are screaming. But you know who's not screaming? Thousands and thousands of taxpayers who will just leave Illinois, leave Chicago, because they're fed up. They're fed up with being afraid. They're fed up with the protesting. They're fed up with stores being hijacked and destroyed. They're just going to leave. They won't hold news conferences. They won't virtue signal on Twitter. They're just gone. So Lori Lightfoot has a tough job. She's caught between them all, with no money left on that log of hers. My buddy and co-host Jeff Carlin is here as always. He's the executive producer of the Rokon Show on WGN Radio. And if we sound rather halfway decent, it's because Jeff, the best producer in town, makes it so. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist of the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. And joining us will be a tribal chieftain of Chicago. Start over. And joining us will be one of those tribal chieftains, John Catanzaro Jr., president of the Fraternal Order of Police, the police union. The FOP sees Lori handing a huge contract to the CTU, caving to most of their demands on work rules. Basically, the CTU runs the schools now. But those cops, the cops that they praise for taking all that abuse, the ones who don't give the finger back, there's no contract for the Chicago cops. There's no contract for years. If that isn't a finger, it's definitely a mutza given by City Hall to them. And where are you in this city of tribes, screaming down at Lori Lightfoot on her log? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
As promised, our next guest, John Catanzara Jr., the president of the FOP, Fraternal Order of Police, a man who's been described, I guess, as a loose cannon, a man who's challenged his own bosses, even filed a complaint against former police superintendent Eddie Johnson for leading a protest across the Dan Ryan, which caused him to lose his police powers. You're the first police union guy that I know of that can't hold a gun. Am I right?
I would venture a guess that that's pretty accurate. But I can't tell you, the complaint on the superintendent wasn't my first complaint on superintendents. I did try and make one on Jody Weiss back in the day, but everybody in the chain of command, including internal affairs, IPRA at the time, and everybody up to and including First Deputy Al Weisinger at the time, refused to take the complaint. So accountability goes across the board.
So right now we're in a time of extreme force politically. The Chicago Teachers Union, I guess, is telling the mayor that they run the city and they're trying to get rid of cops in schools. What do you think of that?
Well, having been a school officer for 3.5 years and actually a decorated school officer who was given community involvement awards for everything I did while I was at Hubbard High School, including building a koi pond with my bare hands on my own time with my own money to try and give those kids an experience in life that they might not otherwise ever have, because I certainly never had something like that. And I was just trying to give them a peaceful place to hang out at lunch. And I was the cross country coach for the girls team. I was very involved in that school, and in a blink of an eye, I was labeled as a racist because of my one picture standing in front of a squad car. But I know the importance of officers in the school and the differences they can really make. There was many kids who would come and talk to me about home life, just simple things, and it's an ability for officers to give teenage kids a different perspective of what the police really are. And here they are crying that we need to change the perception, but they're taking away one of the best tools to make that happen. Or trying to.
So what happens in the schools if there weren't cops?
Well, knock on wood, you know, we've been lucky we haven't had any active shooter incidents in Chicago, but I don't think they're seeing the forest through the trees with some of the decisions they're trying to make going forward. The simple fact is CPS has become much more lenient on discipline over the years. Specifically, while I was there for those 3.5 years, I saw a absolute increase in looking the other way. I can only imagine how much worse it has gotten over the last almost 2+ years since I've been out of the schools, but it just doesn't make any sense. You have the ability to have a sworn officer in the schools to help mentor troubled kids, which is clearly what they're trying to say needs to be done, and they're trying to eliminate that avenue from actually being a reality. It makes no sense whatsoever.
As we tape this, there's talk of a big protest outside Fraternal Order of Police headquarters on Washington, part of the Floyd protests, George Floyd protests. How do you see that happening? How do you see that working out? Can you see police officers coming outside and kneeling before the crowd, as I've seen other officers do in other jurisdictions?
Well,
any kneeling going on?
I would hope not, because the simple fact is we are a fraternal organization with rules under our Constitution and bylaws. And if protesters are, like yesterday, spouting defunding the police and abolishing the police, and you decide that you're going to kneel in support of that position, that is in direct contradiction to our Constitution and bylaws. Discipline-wise, the department obviously can't really do much, I guess, and probably wouldn't, because they've kind of support, at least from the mayor's office on down, that kind of agenda. But this is a private organization. We have a different set of rules that we expect our members to abide by. And, you know, those kind of actions will be dealt with accordingly. There is no officer that should be kneeling at any time when you're in uniform. What you want to do on your free time, knock your socks off. But when you're wearing that uniform, you are a representative of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 7, unless you're a fair share member. As such, you're expected to act accordingly. And if you don't, you can face, obviously, lodge charges.
So no kneeling for cops in uniform.
Well, I can't prevent them from doing it, but
right.
I hope they realize there might be repercussions if they do.
Hey, John, and thanks for spending time with us. So in that regard, I mean, officers, what is the feeling there? I know probably assume, or people just assume what the feeling is there, but is there any appetite at the FOP for these demonstrations as part of understanding, you know, the idea of reform and stuff, not necessarily the defunding thing, which seems extreme, but is there any appetite among the rank and file in your lodge that maybe, hey, we need to be self-introspective kind of thing?
Well, my team was called the Vision Team for a reason, and the membership clearly liked what we had to say. I think we present a unique perspective going forward, an experience and perspective as far as what we've seen in this job and throughout our life. And I know we all are introspective in that sense, where we realize, you know, the same old doesn't happen. This isn't 1968. We're not going to be beating the hell out of rioters like they did then. You know, I know some people like to call that's what should happen. You know, if they're violent protesters, that's a whole different ballgame. But peaceful protesters absolutely have a right to be heard. I will be the last person to ever say otherwise, that you don't have First Amendment rights to be heard, as long as it's peaceful. And I have no problem communicating with anybody. Almost anybody, I will say, can sit down in my office, schedule a meeting, and you want to discuss some of these topics in private with me about the direction that you think needs to be going forward, I'll be more than happy to speak as the representative of this lodge with another member of my team or whatever, and address your concerns and figure out if we can find a middle ground. I'm all about trying to find solutions. I'm not hard and fast, we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing and expect something different to occur. We clearly understand that the lodge needs to adapt it with time. I mean, that's just what people do. Human beings by nature adapt. So again, there's some things that are absolutely no go in my book, but I'm always willing to listen to anybody's argument.
One of your senior union leaders now, your first deputy, I don't know what the title is, knows exactly what some of the protesters are talking about. They talk about undue use of force. They talk about improper incarceration. I'm talking about a friend of mine, Mike Meddy, who I wrote about years ago when he was unjustly imprisoned for defending himself in a fight against two men, and who was thrown in the can and they threw away the key. And I wonder what kind of perspective does Mike bring to this, knowing his backstory?
You know, when we first kind of joined together and decided to go down this wonderful adventure that we're on, I could tell you, me and Mike obviously had many conversations, and obviously I know his backstory, he knew mine, and we present, which is exactly what we explained to the members when we were out campaigning for this election cycle, that we are giving you a whole different perspective than you've ever had before, and you're going to have a different voice. We understand, and it does parlay, John, you're correct. You know, Mike, my first vice president, and he basically number two in charge here, absolutely has lived a life that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. I mean, I'd rather go to the police board three more times than have to go with, you know, spend a day in prison. God bless him for putting up with that and still being, you know, in the right mind. So, yes, he does come with knowledge that just about every other police officer that I know doesn't have any clue what it's really like to actually be in that situation. So he can relate to these people. We have had these private conversations about, you know, being a little more understanding and at least receptive to listening. That doesn't mean that you're going to listen to crazy people like yesterday who are talking about abolishing the police. But we certainly, we've had conversations about people who, you know, are wrongly targeted. And the perfect example is the unconstitutional stay-at-home orders that were in place by the governor and the mayor, and how long that lasted when they didn't have the right to be doing that to begin with. And we did not feel that our members should be enforcing any of that because you're violating people's constitutional rights. Obviously, Mike knows all about having his rights violated. So it is a unique perspective, to say the least. But it's pretty sad that now, after everything that's happened in the last week, in order to deflect and change attention, now you got Pritzker ranting and raving about the Brickyard Mall like he's some kind of police expert all of a sudden, and he's pandering, obviously, for votes because everybody knows that he has totally mishandled this whole thing. He's more focused on Trump and Washington, D.C., ridiculously. The mayor has no answers for why parts of this city were just burned to the ground, basically, with no plan in effect prior or almost even during. And now, all of a sudden, what's the easy target? That change everybody's attention. The police, the police, the police.
Well, that is a story. The police are being accused of dragging a woman out of her car and, you know, muscling her. I think there's the allegation. Is that the one about the foot on the neck? Is that the allegation?
Yes.
Well, can you talk about it? What happened?
I'll keep it simple because obviously it's an ongoing investigation and I'm not about putting anybody in a corner. But from what I've seen in the video, we are trained that you are allowed to put your knee on the shoulder blades of an individual to keep them on the ground if they're trying to get up. That's totally different than what happened in Minnesota. Nobody that I know that I've spoke to in this lodge that wears a Chicago Police Department badge thinks that that was okay to kneel directly on someone's neck. That is a lethal option. And you're basically, if you can do that, you could also shoot the person. That wasn't the case there, and shame on him for doing it. And the crazy part is that video was out within less than a day. The guy was arrested shortly thereafter and charged. The other three were charged, and yet we still have all of this, as if this was all swept under the rug. This whole crazy explosion of, oh, my God, police misconduct, it doesn't have any traction whatsoever. The process is working like it's designed to work. What more do you want? I get this frustration for past experiences, but again, they're pinning their hat on something that doesn't make any sense. But specific to the Brickyard, again, I do not see a knee on the neck, a foot on the neck, or anything like that. Clearly, politicians like to deflect from their failures, and now they're going to try and make something out of that's not there. I think, you know, the most unique thing I noticed was when the mayor made a comment yesterday or the day before, I forgot when it really kind of hit, but she referred to COPA conducting the investigation and that they were going to follow the channel's procedures, blah, 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 as normal. Well, anybody that knows the mayor or follows politics knows if the mayor would have saw something wrong, or at least what she perceived to be wrong, she would have said so. Clearly, the fact that she didn't say anything about the actual incident itself, she kind of was hesitant to say he was kneeling on the neck either. I don't think that was the case. But nobody talks about the secondary incident where one of those officers were punched in the right side of the head, or I guess it would be his left side of the head, and that young lady was also arrested. That was an aggravated battery. She absolutely willfully and intentionally punched him upside the head. I would love to know what charges she's facing and if Kim Fox is going to prosecute her for the felony that she should be charged with.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to John Cannizzaro, Jr., FOP President, Fraternal Order of Police, on the Chicago Way. And I just wanted to go back a couple days in time to two things. Your assessment of Mayor Lightfoot and Superintendent Brown's handling of the riots or the protests, the peaceful protests that became riots downtown and throughout the South Side. I keep hearing that police were ready, they weren't used, there weren't enough of them used, and that they were staging, I don't know, somewhere near Soldier Field when they should have been either downtown or maybe standing in front of that store that I was at the other day at 75th and Jeffrey, where the looters took it out. Now, seniors don't have a place to get medicine or groceries. What is your assessment of how they handled it strategically and tactically?
Well, I think both aspects of that were at best suspect, at worst a failure. That's the mayor's word she likes to use. But the simple fact, I sat in the mayor's office Friday morning, finally had my first meeting. And I can tell you, one of the agreements we had going forward was I'm not going to embellish or lie about what we discussed. But I can tell you one of the things she was very adamant about, because Minnesota did come up. No way was Chicago going to be Minneapolis. Of course, it wasn't necessarily, I guess, a direct correlation, but on many instances, it was pretty similar. And later that day or night, Friday, there was obviously signs that this was going to be a snowball rolling down a hill getting bigger.
You're talking about the week before Friday, because we're talking about a week ago now.
Yes. Correct. Last Friday. So right. Prior to that whole explosion over the weekend, you know, I don't have any idea why after Friday night's little skirmishes that occurred, there wasn't an immediate call for the National Guard to come up there to supplement the troops and block whatever roads they needed to block, you know, seal off downtown. And not with 350 or whatever it is. It should have been at least 3,000. That's just, I mean, if you're going to do something, you have to do it right. But again, it seems like the mindset was more, let's just go soft and hope these people understand that we're trying to be nice to them. They weren't coming here to be nice. They were coming here to destroy, cause anarchy, and loot. And I shouldn't even say they came here. Outsiders came to obviously distract and cause the anarchy, knowing the rest of the population would take advantage of the situation and the distractions and start burning and looting stuff and getting as much free stuff as they could. But again, that should have been done first thing Saturday morning. That request should have been in. The governor should have said, I'm going to send you 3,000, not 300. That's not going to be enough. If I don't even know who asked for the specific number or who came up with the number of 300 odd National Guard, but it was absolutely ridiculous. It's like,
do you think that it was, they did that being of the political left, both of them, that they did not want to have the optics, meaning, news photos of National Guard in the city streets? Was that what it was?
There's no doubt about it. That's 100% what it was, because the simplest example I can give you is that Cook County Police sent a unit. I'm not sure what unit it was, but they were in their riot turtle gear, basic quote-unquote turtle gear from what we used for NATO. Our troops were not allowed to use that gear. We were told it looked too militaristic. They didn't want that appearance going forward. And our officers were injured in large part because they were not allowed to use that gear because people were afraid of the perception of how it was going to look. That is inexcusable. You know, when you do things halfway, if you're trying to restore order and keep order, you have to do it 100%. You can't do it halfway. And when you have, this weekend shows exactly what happens when you do it halfway.
You have, with the teachers demanding police leave the schools, I wonder, they're very loud now. And I know that there are many police officers, Chicago police officers, married to Chicago school teachers, particularly on the Northwest and Southwest side, the old cop and the nurse cop and the teacher thing. And there are many, many. I wonder how they think about it.
Well, I think like many Chicagoans, unfortunately, a large number of the CPS employees and CTU employees are a silent majority, hijacked by left-wing agendas within their union. I would just hope, like, we're going to try and get the silent, quiet majority in this city to speak up in support of the police in opposition of the stuff that's been going on. Like I said, I have no problem. Is this protest today is peaceful? They want to come and protest. God bless them. That's their right. But again, I think that opinion is absolutely in the minority, and I would hope the citizens of Chicago start coming out in support of the police in mass numbers, because we need an obviously opposing version. But specific to the teachers, again, I've obviously had my comments about the teachers, and I've obviously received comments in return that, you know, people didn't appreciate this. You know, my wife's married to my wife's a teacher, et cetera, et cetera. I get it. But if you're going to sit by silently while your union hijacks your viewpoint and starts speaking things that you don't agree with, well, then shame on you. Take it back. Get rid of the leadership and start putting people in who will obviously fight for what you believe in. That's what our membership did. That's why I'm here.
One of the issues of the teachers is they're really loud now. Look, get rid of the cops. The cops are terrible. We don't want cops in our schools. That's what they say. But when the Chicago Tribune did a great investigative series on 500 students sexually abused in the Chicago public school system, most by teachers, the Chicago Teachers Union didn't have much to say about it. I don't even think they didn't hold a rally. They didn't even hold a news conference. They didn't stand up and say, this must end. We're going to get rid of it. They didn't. There was nothing. It was like crickets. Any thoughts on the differences between these two things?
Well, it kind of parlays. I was literally right in the middle of all that. My first 2 weeks when I got assigned to Hubbard High School, I could tell you, there was a scandal that came out. There was a security guard that was arrested for fondling students for over the course of several years. When one girl finally came forward, then more and more came out. I think the end of total ended up being 9 or 10 girls who he had touched inappropriately. And, you know, he got sentenced to prison. It kind of alerted me to what was going on and the dynamic. You kind of pay attention. And like I said, for 3.5 years, the principal at the time absolutely thought I was the best thing since sliced bread as far as the police are concerned there, that I was so involved. She never seen this before, blah, blah, blah. But she was willingly looking the other way while these allegations were going on. There were repeated allegations within that school of teachers doing things, and they were allowed to. There was a teacher that got pregnant by a football student, and literally she went on her merry way and kind of walked out the door and left. Nothing was done there. There was example after example where teachers and staff in that school were accused of certain things, and nothing was ever done on any level. But as like I said, the second I was booted out of that school as considered a racist in a split second, I made many complaints to CPS about a lot of things I saw wrong at that school. And now that principal is no longer even allowed on CPS property. If we're looking the other way, one of the athletic director who was part of the problem was forced into retirement. One of the counselors had to transfer to another school. There were so many people willingly looking the other way. And again, it's all the misdirection thing. You know, just like the mayor does and just like the governor does, CPS obviously likes to point at us because they don't want to look at themselves. I don't know the exact numbers, but I'll just say this.
Yeah.
So CPS, if I'm not mistaken, CTU has roughly 40,000, I think, members or employees. The Chicago Police Department, for better or worse, has 14,000. Our members, we lose maybe anywhere between, on a bad year, 20 officers. On a good year, maybe 3 or 4. CTU has 4 times the membership, but we get fired at a 10-to-1 ratio. You know how hard it is to get rid of a bad teacher? It's ridiculous. but yet they all want to sit here and complain about the schools and the teaching and the opportunity for their children. But when the teachers strike, they're all out there championing the teachers are the best. But then they complain about the schools and the education that they're providing to them. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
So who runs the city? The mayor? The teachers union? The police union, which doesn't have a contract? Who runs the city now?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that the teachers have a very large voice in this city. And the mayor clearly, I don't want to say is afraid of them, but knows that that is part of her power base and she needs to take care of them if she plans on getting reelected, because she needed to obviously schmooze them a little bit to convince them that Preckwinkle wasn't their guy or their girl. But going forward, it's definitely the teachers that need to be accounted for. And you parlayed into the fact that our members don't have a contract going up on 3 years now. Yeah. Our contract was, they were negotiating the teacher's contract before it was even formally expired. Well, ours was expired and we got put in the back of the bus. Inexcusable. Again, so that just kind of shows you where the priority list is at. But I didn't see the teachers out there, protecting buildings and stopping them from being, torched or looted or getting protesters to go the other way.
Well, I didn't see cops out there protecting buildings either.
Well,
were they? I know that police officers wanted to, wanted to make arrests. And
correct,
I was told by police officers, they basically had the idea stand down. Was there a formal stand down order, or did it just?
I have no knowledge that there was a formal stand down order. Obviously, that seems to be the popular opinion. And if you look at a lot of the response and I heard a lot of conversations in the media in the last couple of days about the police failure. It's the brass. They need to add the word brass. It's not the failure of the men and women in the blue shirts. It's the people in the white shirts who make the decisions, who tell the blue shirts what to do and how they're going to get it done. That's where the failures are coming from. And one of my best examples for that is the curfew order. I said it time and time again. You implement a curfew order, but then you don't start basically announcing, grab anybody and everybody that's on the street and grab them off the street for curfew, period. Stop.
That even means John Cass walking his dog at 9:30.
Yes, right? That means John Cass walking his dog at 9:30. I mean, if you're trying to instill civil order again, and literally that was enacted at 11 o'clock on Saturday, but I literally listened to the radio and watched pod cameras all over this city. Nowhere were officers arresting anybody for curfew, and there was no order to given as such. So what was the point of the curfew order? It was like a tacit threat. Again, don't do that again or else. Okay, that doesn't work, especially in that kind of situation. It wasn't done Sunday when it got even worse into the neighborhoods. The vehicles were the biggest problem here. People were mobile. They were obviously social media and phones allow people to text each other and send messages on where to go. Soft spots, if you will, in the defense. That's why the cars should have been stopped after 9 o'clock. People should have been taken out of the cars, arrested for curfew, and their cars should have been impounded. That would have solved a lot of the looting and burning that occurred, because they wouldn't have been.
I get the looting. I get the breaking of windows and the looting downtown, and the renting of U-Haul trucks that they did. Some of it was organized
renting, but outside. I don't know if renting is the word that was. I don't think anyone was renting U-Hauls. I think a lot of those were stolen U-Hauls.
Oh, well, yes, yeah, stolen. Okay. Yeah. I didn't want to accuse anyone of a crime and be insensitive. but out on the, I get it. The skinny white boy with the Guy Fawkes mask and the, Antifa thing and his little club or whatever. I understand that. I know what it is. But on the south side, again, 75th and Stoney, the stores were smashed, and those that didn't have black-owned business signs on them were smashed. And, there was a woman, I was writing about it last week, a woman standing up and saying, even in the midst of this chaos, a woman is saying, don't steal from this store. It doesn't belong to you. We're not going to have a store again. We're not going to have a store. And I'm just thinking, it's the kind of thing that I think most people don't realize is that in any community, there's like not just one answer and there's not just one person and one voice. There's many voices. And I don't know what you guys think in the police department about those people, the seniors, the folks that are trying to do the right thing in their neighborhoods, and they're overwhelmed out there.
Well, that kind of goes back to my silent majority thing. You know, I think that is the large percentage of the population of this city who want law and order, who do not want these streets to be bloodbaths on a routine basis during the summer or even any time of the year, theoretically. But I I'll give you another example. Everybody saw the video of the street party in Inglewood that got, you know, out of hand, where police had to come in and running up and down the street, chasing people, locking everybody up. That wasn't a street party. That was a memorial for a dead gangbanger. And there were people that were not even from that neighborhood or specifically on that block who were at that scene, who were causing havoc. Shots were fired. Guns were recovered. Again, but they make it look like the police are this occupying force who came in and kicked everybody out of there. You know, the simple fact is when that was all said and done and everything was cleared away, there were actually people on those blocks that came out and were thanking the police for getting rid of all those people because they were afraid to leave their house. They were afraid to get in their car and go get something to eat because they didn't have that ability. So they're there.
That was where the five-year-old was shot, right? Little baby? The five-year-old? Was that the
one? No. No.
That was the other. There have been many, many, many street parties.
Well, it wasn't a street party. That was my point. I know the street party you're talking about. This was advertised as a street party that was broken up. It wasn't. It was a memorial for a dead gangbanger. Again, no place for that nonsense because it only basically promotes more violence going forward. But the people on the block didn't have, you know, they just weren't able to come out and say, get the hell out of here. But they were thankful that the police finally did.
Speaking of nonsense, I heard... You know, I came down, I should let people know, the listeners, though, I came down to talk with you just to meet because we hadn't met before, kick things around. You told me something. And then later you did an interview or two on the record, and you accused the former FOP president, Kevin Graham, of putting cameras, surveillance cameras, in the office. What is that about?
Again, that was a news article that Fran put out. Internal matters are just that. They are dealt with internally. I'm sure over the course of time, the story will get out, but I'm not going to discuss internal matters. We have a process that's being followed, and I'm going to stick to that.
So is there a civil war in the FOP like there is at the New York Times?
Not at all. Is there powers that be that are not happy that I'm the president and my team has control of the board of directors? Absolutely. People do not like change. The same old, you know, there's been people that have been involved in the FOP Lodge 7 for a long time. And they've been pulling the strings for the better part of the 25 years I've been on this job. And they just do not want to lose that authority or power or ability to affect the things that go on here. They no longer have that ability.
I've talked to some cops, and you know, I've got cop friends, and John and I both do. But and as a realization, and my take on everything is that we've got neighborhoods in this city who have been, and John and I have talked about this, that have been victim to crappy policies for generations, right? And we have cops who are paid, unfortunately, to clean up the messes that are left behind from those things. And a lot of it winds up, a lot of cops tell me that, hey, yeah, you know, this is a stressful job. This is a hard job, obviously. This is going into terrible places, terrible situations, time in and time and again. And we're all human, and cops are human. And that there's a mental piece of it where psychologically people become, you know, disconnected from what they might have been before, or what they reality or whatever it is. John, and my question to you is that, how do you feel about that? Do you guys, does the FOP feel that there needs to be a better, I hate to say softer, but a softer approach to letting cops deal with stresses on the job and crappy situations and be allowed to freely be like, hey, listen, I need help here because I'm losing what it is to be human because I'm stuck in these crappy situations time and time again.
Well, mental health is obviously huge, considering the line of work that we've all chosen. You know, police do, I would say even firefighters to some degree, you know, they're more of the mop-up crew or more of the mop-up part in the action kind of thing. So both professions see some major trauma, but specific to police and you know, Chicago police, the incidents you see on a daily basis in some neighborhoods is beyond depressing. You know, there's images that are absolutely burnt in my mind that will never leave. They're just there. I could literally still smell a three-year-old baby's burnt body that I had to transport to the morgue. And I actually had it on the front seat instead of putting it in the back of the wagon. But I could literally close my eyes and still recall that smell almost 20 years later, plus. So, yeah, it stays with you forever. It jades you some to some degree. But I think if we promote other avenues of expression, hobbies, whatever the case may be, we need to find ways to obviously allow officers to be more human and not so robotic and to have an outlet to obviously freely speak what they're thinking and saying without being condemned, judged, you know, shunned, whatever the case, whatever the word you want to use. So, you know, that goes back to the discussions with the mayor. One of the things we also discussed was, you know, mental health. And right now the system runs through the city and, you know, there are departments in this country who run their own mental health systems. And we obviously are looking into somehow transferring the facilitation of those services through the lodge as opposed to through the city in the hopes that more officers will take advantage of those services. And then the fear of their employer knowing what's going on would be different because the confidentiality would be much more increased as far as running through the lodge. You know, and the other thing, speaking with one of the lead negotiators for the city on that very topic, you know, training. We're mandated by the consent decree to get 40 hours of training a year. Okay, great. But what is consistent in those 40 hours is sometimes fluff just to get the 40 hours in. But the previous regime was against mandated mental health training. We are not. If we can save one cop from taking their own life, then I'll be damned if I'm not going to force and mandate that the other 13,000 are going to be obligated to sit in a class for whatever 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever the block is, and listen to obviously what is available to them for help. So be it, because that is a fair trade-off. And if anybody doesn't understand that, well, I'm sure they'll be more than happy to send me an email or send me a text or send me a Facebook message letting me know. But it's still something we're going to make it happen.
Your response I'll write your response now. Grow the bleep up. Take the class. Don't be an idiot. Right.
And I want to make the point, just because of our listeners, that it's and the cop's suicide is so heartbreaking because of that. What we just talked about and what you just were talking about sticking with you, but even to the point of a cop being in a situation where you know they make a mistake only because their brain is so compressed and suppressed that we could save a life of a civilian too. And I just want to make that point because that's really what some of the cops I've talked to have talked about, that they're not that they've made mistakes, but that they could see themselves making a mistake because of all the other noise in their head, because of all the trauma that they have to see day in, day out.
Well, I think the better word would be it almost dehumanizes you to some degree or desensitizes you. So yeah, you do look at people in a different way. And this isn't a race thing necessarily. You know, it's just you look at people, a criminal's a criminal. And you kind of, I don't know, I'm trying to find the right words without getting bleeped, but or someone complaining that I was being too foul-mouthed. But, you know, the term piece of shit just comes to mind. You look at a criminal and that's what you think. And you don't look at them as a human being. Right or wrong, you know, there are some circumstances where a human is so vile that that's exactly what they are. But, you know, the typical, you know, bum on the street corner who's just being annoying or you know, relieving himself in an alley, that term doesn't fit. But time and time again, it's just almost an automatic response because of everything that you've seen over the years. It's just a category you lump people into automatically. So, yeah.
It's a defense mechanism, isn't it? It's really a defense mechanism.
Well, yeah, it definitely keeps your guard up on that level. But the specific to what's going on today, these continued work hours do not help that situation. That's just a fact. Working 12 hours a day, every day, for two straight weeks is not helpful at all. So that dynamic needs to change. They need to start giving officers time off. And that was also one of the other things we discussed. Officers need their time off. And I explained to the mayor, and to her credit, she seemed interested and open to the idea of, you know, figuring out a dynamic. Without going too much into the details, the simple fact is, you know, we accrue time. We can get paid overtime, or we can save the hours accrued and cash them out at the end. I explained to her, let them use their time. If they have time off, pay the time and a half for officers to fill in. But if someone wants their day off, give them their day off, and we'll pick from there. You're saving money in the long run, and you are absolutely giving the officer the time off that he can spend with his family. So that mindset does change going forward. They're not constantly bombarded by these images, these words, these thoughts, and these pressures from work.
John Catanzaro Jr., Fraternal Order of Police President, and a man who is willfully, and I think a little proud of, being insubordinate to his bosses. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John.
To Jeff Carlin, executive producer of The Rokon Show on WGN. And I can't thank me, it's just me. John Cass, columnist, Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board, and a very mild-mannered fellow. Thanks for being here, and join us again next week, won't you?